You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 404. We must be willing to get rid of the life we've planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us. Joseph Campbell.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari.
Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's filmbizbook.com. Before we get started, guys, I set up a special link to help people affected by the coronavirus, and you can donate to Feed America. There is a lot of people in need out there, and Feed America is a great organization. And they're helping millions of people on a daily basis. And they also need your help. If you want to donate even $5, $10, it goes a long way. Head over to indiefilmhustle.com/help. Well, guys, I am excited for today's episode. We have filmmaker and filmtrepreneur Patrick Solomon, who is the director of the widely celebrated film Finding Joe. Now, Finding Joe is an exploration of Joseph Campbell's studies and the hero's journey. And I watched this film years ago and loved it. And I just saw it pop up here and there and constantly being, you know, seen in Netflix and all these other streaming services and platforms. And I always wondered how Patrick, you know, was doing with the film. And I come to find out that Patrick read Rise of the Filmtrepreneur and was super stoked about what it had to say and how it could help his film continue to make money years after its release. So in this episode, Patrick and I get into it and we start talking about how the film came to be, what he did right, what he did wrong when he released it originally, what his distribution journey has been, and how the Filmtrepreneur method is being used to squeeze every last drop of revenue out of this film and helping it find a new audience and being of value to that audience, which is always the key to getting any money and any revenue from a film, providing massive amounts of value to your audience. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Patrick Solomon. I'd like to welcome to the show Patrick Solomon, man. Hey, Patrick, how you doing, brother?
What's happening? Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on the show, man. I am a big fan of your film, Finding Joe. And I saw it years ago when it first came out. And I actually have gone back to it a bunch of times because it's just, it's like a warm cup of like coffee or like, you know, something like a piece of apple pie. Just very comforting. It's a very comforting film.
It's comfort food for sure.
It's comfort food because it's very hopeful. It's a very hopeful film. And it's just very well executed, and it was unlike anything I'd seen before that time, or honestly since, talking about the work and life of Joseph Campbell, but like more of his theories and stuff. But we're gonna get into Finding Joe. But first and foremost, how did you get into the film business?
Let's see. I got into the film business at a really young age. I was just into it right out of high school. I started shooting. on Super 8 film, just to date myself. And I started shooting stuff that I was into, like skateboarding and snowboarding. And right when snowboarding was first becoming snowboarding, right, you couldn't really go anywhere except for like three places. Once again, dating myself. I said, okay, let's make a snowboard film. And then some sponsors at the time came out and said, okay, we'll fund that. And I started shooting snowboard films. And that was it, man. I was like, I'm off to the races. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Very cool. And you worked in the commercials. That's what.
Right. So in the summer times, I would come back to LA and I'd work as a production assistant in commercials. So my contacts grew in commercials. And so somebody was like, hey, you're doing these snowboard films. Would you be interested in shooting any commercials? And I said, yeah, I'd do that. And so I started shooting commercials and I was like, this is great. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. And so I had I was off to a commercial, a career as a commercial director.
And that was a different time because you and I are similar vintages. I remember when there was just money flowing into commercials.
Flowing.
You would have half a million.
Like rain.
Half a million here, million plus there campaigns. It was insane. I was in South Florida during that time, and so I was working with some of the big commercial houses down there, and I just saw it was the 90s.
I got into it at like late 90s, like 96, 97. I got my start there, and then I worked all the way through to when I started making Finding Joe, which was 2010, 2009.
It's a commercial work, and if anyone listening right now, it's not nearly as easy to get into the commercial world anymore as it used to be.
It's not. I would back that up. It is and it isn't, right? Because if you're young and you're just starting out, and you can afford to, you know, if you're in your 20s, especially, you know, if you don't have a relationship, you don't have a kid, you don't have a lot of commitments like a mortgage, you can just go out and shoot whatever you want. It might be. To get paid is a lot harder, but to get a client and just say, hey, I'm going to shoot some cool stuff for free and build a reel, that absolutely. Might actually be easier.
Oh, yeah. Free services are always easy to sell. That's right? Not – I think in any decade, it's a very simple, easy process, right. Generally speaking. But, yeah, I'm just like to get back up to like the David Fincher style budgets and the Michael Bay budgets back in the 80s and 90s.
Never coming back.
My God. Those days, man. I just remember those.
It's not coming back.
Like propaganda days. Remember the propaganda days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I worked for them too.
Yeah, you worked for – yeah, I mean, one of my best friends worked in the vault at Propaganda. So he would send me VHSs of Fincher, Bay, Gondry, Jones, right. Fuqua. He'd send me their reels. And right. Before the internet, really. So I would see all their demos and short films. And it was freaking awesome, dude. It was a different world.
Different world. Different
world. So then you got out of the commercial world for a minute and got into the highly, highly profitable documentary space.
Yeah, nobody told me that at the time, though. Right? So I was thinking, you know, and in my mind, I was like, okay, I'm going to make this film. And I was kind of – I was really – commercially, I was like, okay, what's next? I've kind of done this and I was getting a little soured on doing commercials. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do this film and that'll launch me into this whole career doing documentaries and all. I didn't really think about the money too. Just, and to your book, Filmtrepreneur, I really wasn't thinking that way at all. You know, I still considered myself an artist and all I got to do is make something good and the money will follow.
Sure.
It really, and I didn't even think that even an actual thought. That was more like a feeling I had. And so, so on that end of it, obviously it didn't work out because as you know, and as you write about, you really have to be intentional about, your distribution and your marketing and how you're going to make money on this thing.
Yeah. But the good thing about Finding Joe, well, first of all, we're talking about like everybody knows what it is. Tell everybody what Finding Joe is and how it came to be.
Right. So Finding Joe is a film I did. It was released in 2012 and it's a film about Joseph Campbell's work. Right. And so if you don't know who Joseph Campbell is, just really quick, he was a mythologist and he discovered this common thread in all stories of the world. Hollywood uses Joseph Campbell's work quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And he called it the hero's journey. Right. A hero in every single story goes on a almost the exact same journey when you break it down. And so Joseph Campbell coined the phrase, the hero's journey, and he also coined the phrase, follow your bliss. And what was different about him was he made this correlation and he said, well, the reason why every hero in every story in every time period is taking the same journey is because humans are taking the same journey. So he correlated the story that you see on the screen to the story of your life. Mm-hmm. And so the film is about that part of it. The film is really about the story of your life more so than Joseph Campbell.
Yeah, and what I loved about it is you had a lot of guests come in and the people you were interviewing, so it's like celebrities and you know, just authors and other people who really just had such a love for Joseph's work. And anyone who's ever seen Star Wars, because it was just May the 4th be with you yesterday. If anyone who's ever seen Star Wars, it was basically the blueprint of the hero's journey, the original Star Wars.
Exactly. And so that was really what made Campbell's work famous, was that George Lucas was a disciple of Campbell's, right? And so he went so far as to flew Campbell to his estate in Marin County, and they shot this series of interviews with Bill Moyers. Yes. And that also made him quite famous at that time.
Yes, The Power of Myth, which is, I think, available on Netflix now.
It's available on Netflix, available on YouTube. If you haven't seen Campbell's work and you're an aspiring filmmaker or you're a filmmaker, go watch it.
So you start putting this movie together, and I mean, as far as the film entrepreneur style or mentality, I know you weren't thinking about it, but let's do a postmortem on finding Joe.
God, you're going to embarrass me now.
No, I'm not actually. It has a lot of key elements that make sense. So you have a niche audience. It's broad, but it's still a niche audience with people who are interested in Joseph Campbell. That's why I saw it. I was like, I'm a filmmaker. I know who Joseph Campbell is. And this is a documentary that's going to kind of really spoon feed me, you know, without having to read thousands of volumes of or watch Mythos 1 and 2, which is his lecture series, which I watched years ago, and it's pretty academic.
It's very academic. Yeah, it's great if you're into that stuff, but if you're not, it can turn you off.
Exactly. So I was really excited about it, and I would feel that there would be a large audience for this film.
Right.
Because of that. And the celebrities you had involved in it as well. And so there were niche audiences, and there were, you know, there's little packets of people that you can bring in. So how did it actually play out for you?
Okay. So just to preface this too. So I'm about to embarrass myself greatly, with my ignorance at the time. Right. As you were saying those things, I'm feeling like this little pinch, like you're stabbing me, like, oh God, that's
no, I'm not.
Right. Oh God.
No. I mean, I actually, from looking at it from the outside, when I saw this, I was like, this is a really great package. Like it makes sense to me. And I'm assuming it wasn't super expensive to make, because it didn't look like it was super expensive to make.
The grand scheme of thing, it was all in, mm-hmm. like distribution, marketing, all in, the entire budget was $500,000.
Right, which in the grand scheme of independent films is pretty, it's an affordable price, but also
this is affordable,
which is also back in 2010, 11.
Right. I'd say it's probably even less to make now.
Oh yeah, you could probably make that movie much more affordably now, but it's still, it seems smart even at that price point. There's enough. Right. There's enough people out there who know who Joseph Campbell is, who are fans of the Star Wars, you know, that would want to watch this film. So how did it play out?
Okay, so let's get into the postmortem and me embarrassing myself.
Okay.
All right, so first of all, filmmaking mistake 101, self-distribution, right? I said to myself, this film is going to have a theatrical release because I'm a filmmaker and that's what films do, and that's how you that's just the way it is. I'm going to have a theatrical release because
I'm a real filmmaker.
Exactly.
If Spielberg gets a theatrical, should get a theatrical.
Right? So I really like laid down the law there. This is what I'm doing. Mistake number one. And the reason why is because a theatrical release costs so much money do correctly, right? So you need millions of dollars to do that correctly, right? We're trying to get butts in the seats, as they say. Costs a lot of money. So if you're doing it at a small scale, like I was doing it, you're not getting the ROI. You just are not going to make, you're not going to get a bunch of people in the seats with the money that you're going to have to spend. And so that was mistake number one. So we initially started off with just some of these teaser screenings. So I would go to New Mexico. We would just advertise that. We'd try to get a big theater. And we said to ourselves, yeah, we got a niche here. Let's capitalize on our niche. We'd get like a 700-seat theater and sell it out in one night, right? It was awesome. But then we went to the – we only did that six or seven times, and they were so successful and wonderful, and they made me feel so good about myself. And then we got to the theatrical release, the actual theatrical release, and that just sucked, man. We released it in – how did we do this? We rolled it out in New York and then kind of rolled it across the country a little bit. And it was horrible, man. It was just – it was – you know, there was hardly anyone in the theaters. I think overall we had good numbers. But I would go out to the beginning of each city, right? Each city is sort of like on a Friday, and sit down and do a Q&A. And it was like sometimes it was like three people in the audience. It's brutal.
But also, to be fair to you, and I'm going to defend you a little bit to yourself, is that you were doing a theatrical release in a traditional standpoint, not in a kind of guerrilla standpoint. Because now
no, it wasn't right. So we knew we had this niche audience. We just did a really bad job marketing it, understanding who our niche was, knowing where to spend the money. You're right. We didn't run a real – well, we weren't doing TV ads, right? I mean, we were doing – you know, we were doing a lot of internet marketing. But, you know, neither me or my team had the experience to know where to put the dollars.
Right. And also Facebook was around, but it wasn't the powerhouse that it was today.
It wasn't the powerhouse today, and we didn't exploit it to the degree we should have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And there wasn't the kind of pinpoint marketing that's available for the past 5 or 6 years was not available then yet. It was just in its infancy yet. So you really couldn't go into New York City and just target within a 5-block radius of the theater.
Correct.
Like that's not something that was available back then. And then so you were four-walling it, I'm assuming you were paying?
Were we four-walling it? We were four-walling it, yes. We were God, it's been so long, I'm like, were we? I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, so we were four-walling it, meaning we paid for the screen time, and you know it just was a looking back on it, it was like mistake after mistake, and rookie ones too. Like, you know, don't do a theatrical release; you're not going to make any money doing that.
Well, I mean, and again, theatrical there is. Well, now in today's world, there is no theatrical right now as we speak, because of the quarantine. But generally speaking, there can be very successful theatrical runs depending on how you do it. And again, to be fair to you, it was a different time, and there wasn't as much information on it. There just wasn't as much information. There hadn't been a lot of people who had done that successfully yet. Now, I mean, on my show alone, I've had a handful of people who've had extremely, documentaries who've done very well and narratives have done very well theatrically, but they do profit sharing. They don't for a wall. They use internet marketing exclusively. There are ways to make that work. But you were.
If I were to do the whole thing again, I would be completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So now you did this theatrical run. You're not happy with it. So now, where do you go from there?
Right. And so now I'm behind the curve. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of catching up to do. Like, Christmas is coming. Somebody says, "Hey, man, you should have a DVD, and you know we should get this online." And because then you could still buy DVDs. It was just shifting over at that point. But and so it was a scramble. Oh, right. Let's get that done. So we got that done, but we didn't really get the marketing in place for it. So it just was okay. And then, there's these new platforms you check out, Gaia TV, all these other platforms you should, Food Matters was just coming out. So there was a lot of these platforms, but none of them were intentional. Like, we didn't sit down and say, okay, here's our roadmap. Right. We were reacting to stuff coming up, right? It was more like something would pop up and we'd go, oh,
that's cool. Yeah.
Chase our tail a little bit in that process.
Shiny light syndrome.
Exactly. So now going forward, right, and I can't wait to finish the film that I'm on now, because I'm not going to make one single mistake. Okay, right. Maybe not, but I'm going to learn from all those mistakes I made and really, you know, get ahead of the game on the distribution, marketing, the release. What exactly is it that we are selling to the public?
So what happened with the did you sell out? Did you do DVDs? How did you do it all yourself? By the way, did you ever get a conversation with a distributor? No one reproached you about this?
I had a few different conversations with distributors, but I didn't like their deals.
Shocking.
So I just said no to everybody. And then, of course, I jumped in bed with distributor, and you know, we know how that ended.
Oh, geez. So you were caught up in the distributor debacle as well.
Oh yeah.
But that was later. But you must have made some money.
Yeah, that was way later. Yeah. So it took, like I said, I think it took about 2 years to get into the black, right? And looking back on it, it should have just taken way less time, right? Like had I not done that theatrical release, it would have taken us less than a year, mm-hmm. right? Just because of the money we spent. But then we did the DVDs, right? I felt like the DVDs had good sale. I made a distribution deal with a DVD distributor, mm-hmm. And with a couple of markets that were exclusive to him. Mm-hmm. And then I made some deals with people around the world, which I also discovered was a great source of income, was to make deals with different markets worldwide.
You did that directly without a sales rep?
Without a sales rep, yeah.
How did you get access to them, or did they find you?
A little bit of both. Some people found me, but then I would do research. There was a few other films that were out at the time, and I just looked at their distribution list online, like who distributes What the Bleep in Germany, mm-hmm. or where, right? And right. then I just reached out to them. Hey, I got a film, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. So then, and then you're making any money with the DVDs?
We made an okay amount of money. I can't remember what the numbers were, but I remember going, okay, this isn't too bad. Like I wasn't overwhelmed, but I wasn't bummed about that either. Like I wasn't bummed about the income on the DVDs the way I was on the theatrical.
So when you went into the streaming deals, was it a positive or a negative situation?
It was positive. Like I liked the deals that we made. We weren't making a ton of money streaming, like hardly at all. But I just liked the idea that the film was out there streaming. Our best deal was with distributor. We were making pretty decent money with those guys for a while, and it was just Apple TV. That's it. No one else.
It was, and because people were renting it there. Yeah,
because people were renting it and downloading it there. Exactly, and it was such a big platform that people could get to it easy.
And it's also a different. What year is that? We're talking about 2013.
Yeah, exactly, 2013, 2014, 2015. So VOD was a thing.
TVOD was still a thing back then. People were still renting a lot and still buying movies on Apple and stuff like that. Now would be a very different. A different world. But overall, so at the end of this journey with this film, and you're still generating revenue with it, you own it still, I'm assuming.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So you're still generating revenue with it. It's still, you know, overall, it's been a very positive experience.
Overall, man, it has been such a positive and amazing experience. Even like just the production of the film, like making the film was such an amazing, like I would call it one of the high points of my life. Like just producing that film and the people that I met and the experiences that I had making it were just priceless.
Yeah. I mean, I love what you did with the children as reenactments. I thought that was such a clever way to shoot those stories. Like you're trying to tell stories like the hero's journey, but you're doing it through children dressed up in like they're playing imaginary heroes or something like that.
That really worked out. I'm glad that worked out. I was like, this is crazy. No one's going to like this. And then we got a couple tests back and I was like, this is awesome. This is going to be the way we're going to do the whole movie.
Yeah, it was great. It was just, it's a very well-produced piece. You could tell that whoever, you know, the director was, who knew what they were doing. It was very polished. But that's one of the reasons why I reached out to you for Indie Film Hustle TV, because I wanted it so badly, because I was like, oh, please, I'd love to have it on this platform.
Good thing it is. When I got your email, I was like, oh my God, this guy knows who I am. I love this guy.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. So let's talk a little bit about Joseph's work, because I know him, Joseph. Joe, I like to call him. Let's call him Joe. Can you talk a little bit about break down the hero's journey for people who might not know what the hero's journey is in a very basic way?
Sure. So the hero's journey breaks down like this, right? So a hero, there's basically three parts, right? Separation, initiation, and return. And it's, you can think about it like this circle, right? So a hero starts off in their village or their place of comfort, and somehow they are called on an adventure. Sometimes you get kicked out of the village. Sometimes you follow a butterfly into the forest. You know, sometimes your village gets attacked by a neighboring army and it burns down and you got to go. Star Wars is the classic example, right? Sometimes your aunt and uncle are murdered by the stormtroopers, and you got to go. So now the hero goes on an adventure where you learn things, gain things, and you acquire the treasure, right? That's the goal of the journey, is to get the gold or destroy the Death Star. But you get something, and then that's not the end of it. You return with that thing, knowledge, scepter, to the village where you started, right? So separation, initiation, return.
And that's basically the hero's journey in a nutshell. So if you break it down, if you just watch Star Wars, it is literally as perfect of a blueprint, the original Star Wars, to the hero's journey as anything I've ever seen.
Right.
And you start analyzing the hero's journey, and it, you know, the hero's journey is in almost every story. It's not in every story, but it is. I mean, if you start, especially every Hollywood story, every major Hollywood blockbuster, even independent films, all of them have a version of this.
It's difficult to find a film that doesn't.
Yeah, the only ones I've ever found is kind of like, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, like, you know, Sherlock Holmes stories, detective stories. Those don't have that as much because it's a different kind of storytelling. But generally, everything else has the hero's journey in it. And it's – and for people listening, if you – you know, a lot of times I know there's these moments in your life where things happen, like you lose your job, you break up with your girlfriend, you're stuck in a house from quarantine. There are events that happen that are catalysts for you to start a new adventure. And there are opportunities. I always look like I've been fired twice. I had two full-time jobs, only two full-time jobs I ever had in my career. And I was fired from both. I'm very proud of my firings. And both of them started me off on completely new paths. And we break up with someone, start you on a new journey, and you have to learn things. And that's what our life is. You're right. Like, that's exactly what Joseph was saying, is that you start as a child and you go off on journeys, and you sometimes it's literal. Like, literally you get on a boat somewhere and go off on a journey and then come back. But other times it's a little bit more metaphorical, but you do go off and learn things. I mean, I'm sure you learned a lot on that film.
I did. I mean, I feel like just in the making of the film itself was a classic hero's journey. You know, I went out on this adventure to make a film about the hero's journey, right? And then I made this film about the hero's journey, and I returned to the village that is the world, and I shared that journey.
Yeah, basically. And is there any, like, what is your, the books that really draw you from Joseph's work? I'm assuming Heroes Has a Thousand Faces is the main one.
Especially if you're checking this out, then The Hero with a Thousand Faces is like really the classic work. And that's the one that Lucas really gravitated towards. However, it's kind of dense material, right? I would start with The Power of Myth, which is the Moyers series. Mm-hmm. It's a book, right? The Power of Myth, they turn that into a book. Get that one first, because it really breaks down in very easy to understand ways all these different ideas.
Because I was such a Joseph Campbell fan, I actually went out and got Mythos on VHS, Mythos and Mythos 2. Man. They're dense.
I mean, and that's the thing, is you can really get sucked into them if you're in the right mindset, or if you're if you're a Joseph Campbell fan. But if you're not, man, I really recommend Power of Myth. For there's another one called Reflections on the Arts of Living. Mm-hmm. That's an easy way in. You'll get a lot of great information out of that.
What was it about Joseph's work that drew you to him? Like, what made you want to make this documentary?
Life, right? So when I was a kid, and I was just starting my filmmaking career, is when those Moyers interviews came out, and man, I was just hooked on those things, and I started reading everything that he ever wrote, and I really geeked out on Campbell for years and years. And then when I would have a crisis in my life, I would go back to Campbell's work, right, which is essentially the myths of the world, and it really is informational about humans and you know, why we do the things we do, and it provides a great map. Mm-hmm. Right? When you look at a map, you can say, oh man, I'm having this crisis here, but further down the road, I can see it's going to be better. So it provides a good roadmap of life.
And is there any of Joseph's philosophy that can help you on a daily basis as just a human being?
I would say, you know, the classic Joseph Campbell line, which is follow your bliss, right? Follow your bliss and doors will open where there were only walls, right? That's the line. And so to me, the idea of trying to follow your bliss on a daily basis is, it's really a practice, and it's just been magical for myself. And I know for many people, to wake up in the morning and go, what am I here to do? How can I do that? Serve people while doing that. If you can do that, you've won, really.
What is, when you just said be of service, is that something that's very important to you in your work, is of being of service to your audience?
I think so. And I think that the way I look at the hero's journey different now is that, going back to Star Wars, for example, you know, everyone who's on a journey is their own hero, right? You're on your own journey. You're a hero. I'm on my journey. I'm a hero. We bump into people, right? They're on their own journeys. But we can also be the Yodas to people that are on their journey, right? Mm-hmm. And that actually is, to me, feels a lot better now. Like, I love helping young filmmakers out. I just love helping people in other ways. And so to be of service and be a guide and be the Yoda or the Merlin to somebody who's just coming up, that to me just feels better. I love doing that.
It's addictive, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
I started my journey almost five years ago with Indie Film Hustle, and I can't turn back now. This is just it's addictive.
You're providing that service for many people, myself included, right? You're offering this guidance to people who really need it, and it's got to be amazing.
It's a really great feeling to do it. And that's why I always tell people, you know, when you are of service, if you want to follow, if you want your dream to come true, help somebody else follow theirs.
Yes.
Or help somebody else achieve theirs. My favorite quote of Campbell's is, the treasure that you seek is in the cave that you're afraid to walk into.
Yeah.
Which is a great, so true though.
It's so true.
So true. Now, what is the biggest lesson you learned, making that film? Like, if you had the one takeaway?
God, there's so many takeaways. I think from a filmmaker's point of view, there's some creative things that I learned about how to get through creatively, right? Because there was a lot of creative challenges in that film, and creativity isn't always sexy, right? Creativity doesn't always happen in these moments where you get this lightning bolt, right? A lot of times creativity comes from just getting dirty, sweaty, and suffering for weeks.
Very true. Very, very true. Now, what's the next movie you're working on? And how is it going to be different than far as how you're going to make money with it and sell it and get it to your audience? Yeah.
That's a good point. So I'm making this film. The title of the film right now is called What is Money? Right. And the film is about the subject of money. I know it's a broad subject, but it's when I started, I didn't really have a central theme or a question that I was asking. Money just intrigued me. People at the Q&As at Finding Joe would stand up and say, "Hey man, I'd like to just quit my job and follow my bliss, but I need money." And that kind of hit me like, wait a minute, you do need money. And wait, what is money? That's weird. So the idea of money just stuck with me. And I knew that I needed to make a film about it. So it's turning into not a definition of money, but why, what money is, right? Why we suck with it. And how we can understand money in a way that makes you go, oh, right, I get it. I understand money a lot better now. And maybe there's not so much stress and anxiety about it.
Correct. Yeah, I've been studying the topic of money now for a couple of years now. I've read probably 40, 50, 60 books on the subject.
Okay, I'm sure we've read the same books.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm constantly reading stuff about every aspect of money.
Hit me with your favorite bits, because it's interesting what different people take about their takeaways about money. But man, it's a fascinating topic, very triggering, mm-hmm. and I'm stoked to come out with it. And then on the back end of this, I'm doing things that I never did with the first film, which is immediately day one, I started thinking about what's my distribution, what's my marketing strategy, who's my audience. So I just have pages and pages and pages about who my potential audience is, about marketing. What the marketing strategy is going to be, what platforms are we going to run on, just all these things that you should think about. You should think about them just as equally as your production of the film.
Oh, I think if not more so in many ways.
Exactly, if not more so.
Yeah, because there's so many filmmakers who just like you were saying, I'm the artist. When post is done, I'm done. That's the killer.
I thought that way for so long, man. That's the killer. It's going to be the kiss of death right there.
Let me know where's the red carpet. Let me know where the red carpet. I'll pick up the awards. Right. Like, I don't understand.
Can I get my picture taken with? Yeah, let's do this.
No. And you can send the check to this address. And that's basically what you, expect.
Yeah, doing that again. Yeah.
It is such a myth that I've been trying to bust now for 5 years, basically, since I started doing this. And so as far as what you were asking earlier about what like my favorite tidbits on money is, the biggest one I took away, and hopefully this could help some people out. Obviously, Robert Kiyosaki and Rich Dad Poor Dad, which the four quadrants of Rich Dad Poor Dad are super. It was very impactful to me, and I'd read it years ago, but I guess at this age I started listening to it a little bit differently. Which is the employee, the self-employed, the business owner, and the investor, and the concept that when you're an employee, you're basically a serf, you're a slave to that job, and the second that job shuts down, you're done. And that work, and that could be a high paying job. It could be a lawyer. It could be a doctor. It could be, a big movie star, depending on, you know, if you're making $2-4 million a year, that sounds like a lot of money. But if it cost you $4-5 million a year to live your lifestyle,
right,
you're in the same boat as the guy making $20,000 trying to make ends meet, obviously at a different level, but you're still stuck there. So when that money stops, you stop. And the concept of passive income, about creating assets that generate revenue, that has been the biggest lesson. And when you have an online business like I do, that kind of is built into the business model, is creating passive income. And it's never it's I can't tell you, and I'm sure you know this, when you wake up in the morning and there's just magic money that showed up. From something that got sold somewhere. And that happens with stock footage people, and that happens with residuals for actors, and it's like mailbox money. But that passive income is addictive as well. And it gives you so much freedom and so much power.
And that's really what it's about, is that the reason you're trying to create this stuff, you know, passive income and multiple streams of revenue, is not just to get rich, right? It's the lifestyle you're trying to lead, right? The idea is that you have now, you can live the short time you have on this planet doing the things you want to do, instead of being a slave for, you know, the time that you have here and then retiring at 60 and then you only have a couple of years left.
Yeah. And I've been basically self-employed most of my professional career. Like I said, I only had 2 full-time jobs, and all the other time I was always self-employed, but still employed. So there was a little bit more control, but not, but I was still, it was still dollars for hours.
Dollars for hours, right? Like make a day, work a day, make a dollar.
Yeah, and the people who are lack of a better term, rich, it's they don't do that. They understand how to leverage other people's money. They understand when I mean other people's money, meaning banks and, you know, and other things like that. And they have money work for them, and they have assets that are generating revenue for them all the time. Yeah. So they build money machines, like, and that every revenue stream is a money machine. So that's kind of like what I kind of try to explain that in Filmtrepreneur, Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, where you're creating assets for your film, and those assets are generating revenue for you, even when you're not physically working, physically selling. It's constantly doing that, and the more of those you can have, the better, you know. And so
exactly, the more of those you can have, the better. That's exactly it. That's the whole. You get a few of those going, and pretty soon you can choose to do what you want in life.
Right. And that's why people who work in real estate are so successful, because they are able to leverage other people's money to purchase a house or an apartment building that's cash flow positive. Then the people who are renting are paying for their asset. And maybe with appreciation, they can actually get another loan, pay back the bank. And then all of a sudden that asset, they own 100%. And it's just generating revenue for them. So it's basically a free cash machine.
Right. For and you. Films can be the same way too. Right?
Correct. Absolutely.
If you create a film, right, you now have multiple films out there creating multiple streams of revenue. And then on back of the film, like for this film, for instance, because of the subject matter, it really lends itself well to multiple products, right? So we can do a course based on this film. We can do the book based on this film. We can sell all the raw interviews. You know, we can, there's a lot of different ways to slice this thing. And, you know, for the first time ever, I'm like, oh my God, we can actually make a living making a film.
Stop it. Stop the insanity. Are you kidding?
You can really do that, right? You can really make an actual living and pay your mortgage and everything.
But the thing is that, and for people listening, you have to understand that you can't think the way you were trained to think. That old model of I'm done at post, or I'll give a movie to somebody else for that one revenue stream, which is a distributor. That's it. Right. If you think that way, this doesn't work.
It's tough to make that.
It's not impossible because obviously some people do it, but in today's world, it's getting so much more difficult. There's so much more competition. Yes. You know, I'm much more about creating those multiple revenue streams that can kind of always constantly build, making money. Like, and there's guys like I talk about in the book who've built empires, like Food Matters. Right. You know, what's it called? Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. Those guys, I mean, they've literally built multi-million-dollar empires off of
So you're right. It's definitely doable, but it really takes, you got to think that way, right? You you have to change your thinking from yeah, exactly. I'm an artist. As soon as I'm done with this product, I'm either moving on to the next one or the money's just going to come in magically because I'm going to make such a great piece that people are just going to give me money.
Now I'm gonna do a little experiment with you. Let's go back to Finding Joe for a minute. So let's say we're making Finding Joe today.
Oh man, this is great.
Okay, so let's say today no one's ever made Finding Joe. No one's ever made a documentary about. So this doesn't exist yet. So it's not in the zeitgeist at all. And you say, I'm going to make a documentary about Joseph Campbell's work. And you shoot it the same way with the kids and the interviews and everything. How would you position that film today?
This is so great. So number one, I would let the audience know and start building my email list from day one. I would say day one of production, I would have a website that said, I'm making this film about Joseph Campbell. Here's like a little teaser. Please give me your email address. I would start targeting that audience. Facebook, same thing. I would start a Facebook group, target that audience. I want every Campbell fan. There are Joseph Campbell fans out there to this day who don't know what Finding Joe is. They just don't know. So I would not let that happen. I would target this small audience. Number two, the biggest mistake, I did not leverage the talent in that film. Deepak was ready to go. He was like, hey man, you want me to hit my millions of oh my people? God. I was all, yeah.
You didn't do that?
Yeah, I'm going to embarrass myself.
Oh, man.
So I didn't leverage the people that were in the film, right? And so this time, like, I would leverage the hell out of them. I'd be bugging the hell out of them. They're like, on this date, I want you guys to send this tweet out, this Instagram post out. Like, really leverage that. And that's all free. Like, you don't have to pay any money for that. That's all free except for building a website, right? Mm-hmm. Then I would really get into the analytics of the whole thing and start doing A-B testing on different ads. About you know, that different trailers, right? I would start cutting different trailers and start testing which one's working more, which one's getting more views, you know, how and try to really get scientific about how to bring that audience in, because you know, with a very small budget, you can really target an audience, develop some ads, and just your ads now go out to just the people who may buy. This is never happened before in history. Mm-hmm. So you can really make each dollar count when it comes to selling a film or a product online.
All right. So now you're leveraging your ridiculous cast, because it was an amazing cast of people that you had interviewed. It was really amazing cast, very high profile people, and multiple, like, not just spiritual people. You had athletes. You had like Tony Hawk and a bunch of other guys in there. So you could have easily leveraged that. You didn't. Yeah. I didn't know that you did, and so now I'm gonna poke you because that has to. I mean, you should have. You should have. I mean, come on,
right?
Come on, like,
I was an artist back then.
You read my mind. I'm an artist. I don't do that kind of stuff.
I do those things.
Hey, look, we've all been there. Trust me, I've been there. I was there too long. But all right, so now you have the leverage of your interviews. How would you package this differently? What ancillary product lines would you create for Finding Joe today?
I would, and all, the other thing is that, okay, so for Finding Joe, there would definitely be some kind of some printed material, like a workbook or a book or something that goes along with that film that you can follow along on. It's a life lesson, man. There's like, what is the hero? What is the journey of your life? Like, how can you map out your own life? I would attach that to the film. I would still really like to do that. And then there's other ancillary products that people have already created, right? Some people in the film already have Heroes Journey workshops, which I would attach to that film for sure. I would release all the interviews, just raw interviews, like as a package, the PDFs of those interviews. Like I would bundle all that up, and then you could buy that for $9.99 or whatever.
And then would you create possibly an online course as well?
I would create an online course. If I were doing it again, yeah, right now, I would create an online course. I think the ship has sailed on that one.
Yeah, no, of course. So you create an online course for that. Now, would you also, what other answer, would there be any possibilities for t-shirts, for hats? Because people, that's a subject matter that people would buy, like Follow Your Bliss. I think you could get away with that. Like you could just get.
I actually didn't think about that at the time, like all these great logos and slogans, and even the Joseph Campbell Foundation, who just gave me carte blanche on all his stuff. Mm-hmm. Didn't really think about that until much later. But yes, I would create some hats, and I don't know if that would be a big moneymaker, but just getting that out there in the world, and even though those things might not make a lot of money, it's just a little bit here, a little bit there, and getting the name, the word out there is really more important than the money you'll make on those little things.
Could you create an ecosystem? Could you build a business around this? So kind of like what Food Matters did, right? Food Matters has a very big.
I don't think you could do it around Finding Joe, but this next film around money.
Oh yeah, all day.
It's like a not a no-brainer, but it's like
it is.
It really lends itself well to an ongoing business. There's a lot of different things that are already coming up out of it. A lot of interviewees that I just didn't have time to do that would like to be in the film. Mm-hmm. We could just keep going on this one for a long time.
Great. So those are these lessons that you've learned. I've never done that before. Like going back to an original film, like, so if we would take it today, what would you do differently? That's actually really great. Cause like I think
everything. The answer is everything.
So you would have probably been able to make it for a lot less. You would not have spent, if you wouldn't have spent all the money on the theatrical, how much did a movie actually cost you?
The production budget was $250 million, a little more than $250 million, to produce, edit, and finish the film.
So for $250,000, so today you could probably make that for less. You can make that for less. So you would be lower to get, or it wouldn't take you that long to get into the black.
Exactly.
And exactly. Man, I think it would have been in today's world, you would have done very well.
I think it would have done very, very, very well. Yeah, I totally agree. Thanks.
Oh, listen. I mean, you read my book. You know, I had that whole chapter on how I spent $50,000 on that short film and released it on an app because I was so cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I made $700 on that release. So we've all been there, dude. We all done that. But that's been very, very interesting on how you would do it differently. Well, I'm glad that the book has helped you. In any way it's helped you at all, the Film Entrepreneur book, because it sounds like you really are taking a lot of those lessons that I put in the book and are applying it now to your new movie.
Really 100% there. I feel like that was and that book actually, I've been having those thoughts already, because the people I've been interviewing around the subject of money have all been saying very similar things. But when I picked your book up, it was specific to film, and it really solidified my belief that, oh my God, I just need to change my thinking on this. Like I gotta view myself differently. And I did. And it was amazing.
It is a mindset shift. It really is a mind shift. And I can't tell you how important, and everyone listening, I want you to be very perk up here for a second. And I think, and please let me know how you feel about this as well. Changing your mindset, it is the thing to do in any aspect of your life, in any part of your journey. If you want to change, it only will happen once you change your perspective. It only happens when you change that mindset, when you get out of that comfort zone or that little box that we have. If you change the mindset of what you think is possible, because like Henry Ford says, if you believe you can do it or you don't, you can't do it, you're right. And I've seen that happen even recently in my life, where I like, oh, I can't do that. Oh, that's the top there. I'm only gonna get to this place. And guess what? That's the only place I could got. It was that place. But the second you shifted the mindset a bit, then all of a sudden it opened up more, and you're like, well, wait a minute, is that it? Is that all I had to do? And I've known that on an intellectual standpoint for quite some time. But changing the mindset is so, so important. What do you think?
Yeah, it's one of those things that is simple but not easy, right? The idea of changing your mindset is simple, but if you've been in the habit of thinking a certain way, it really takes a lot of work and discipline on your part. You got to keep catching yourself. You got to keep going, oh, right, that's my old mindset. I got to do something about that. That's why it's hard to quit smoking. That's why it's hard to quit drinking. Really, the simple answer is just, hey, quit smoking. But it's not that easy.
Right, right. It's if you don't believe that it's capable of being done, then it will never happen. Period. Yes. Yeah. You know, it's very big.
Awareness, right? If you just need to, you need to get a certain level of awareness that, hey, this thing is possible. I can actually make films and make a living doing them. It's just going to take, you know, these steps, and you just have to embrace that. Mm-hmm. Once your mindset shifts in that way, you're done. You're off to the races. You're done. It's over.
And that's the other thing people always say. Like when I lay out, sometimes I've had people, you know, challenge me on the filmtrepreneur method, and they're like, well, you know, I, you know, this seems like a lot of work. I'm like, yeah. It is.
Yeah.
It's going to take you some time to build an audience. It's going to take you some, the blueprint is like, if I showed you blueprints to build a skyscraper, it's there on paper.
Right.
It's like the construction guy going, this seems like a lot of work. I'm like, yeah, it is. But it's a completely mind shift when everyone's always told you, no, all you got to do is, the hardest part is making the movie, which is not.
And honestly, it's kind of fun. Like, yeah, it's hard work. Like right now, it's a lot of hard work to
– But it's fun.
Deal with marketing. But it's kind of fun. Like I'm learning new things and you know, discovering new platforms and meeting new people. And the process is fun.
Mm-hmm. No, there's no. I've always loved the business side. I've always loved the marketing and design side of filmmaking. It's always been it's a holistic ecosystem for me. It's a, you know, when I made Ego and Desire, I was thinking about like the whole plan when I was doing it. I was like, that's fun. That's more fun for me.
Right.
Without question. Now I'm going to ask you a few questions. I ask all my guests, sir. What advice would you give a filmmaker trying to break into the business today?
Just right now, especially if you're a young filmmaker and you're trying to break into the business, there's two, right? One is, I guess it depends on which part of the business you're after, but you can make films wherever you are. Right now, it's very easy to make films. Just make films, man. Make as many films as you can. Learn the craft of filmmaking. That's number one. Number two is, which what I did is that you can also go to work making money, do it, you know, in films. You can work as an assistant. You can work as a lower member in a crew. You will learn so much, man. There's things you will never learn in film school. You will learn on a set.
Oh, yeah.
That's just a really great way to get a free education or get a paid education.
Now, what is the lesson that took you the longest to learn, whether in the film business or in life?
Those are ego lessons, right? Like the ego lesson, especially as a commercial director, right? You're always just right, and your vision is always right. It's great to collaborate, but being able to let go of your ego in a lot of situations and go, wait a minute, I might not have the answer here. Let's let some other information in.
And what is the biggest fear you had to overcome to make your first film?
God. That's a good question. I think it was the, you know, just failing, right? Like the fear would be, man, what happens if I make a piece of crap and nobody likes it?
Right. Yeah. That the feel of failure is the biggest one. It's always the biggest one. And three of your favorite films of all time.
Oh man, there's just so many. I'll tell you what, there's this one that I always go back to that I love, and it is Stephen Chow's Kung Fu Hustle.
Oh, I love Kung Fu Hustle. Yeah.
It's so well crafted and so well done and so quirky and weird, and just, I think that's just an awesome, just an amazing film. What else? What are my go-tos that I always like go back to? There's so many, man. I always go back to Close Encounters too.
Mm-hmm.
Close Encounters was so well written and executed. Like the writing on that film, I think it's underappreciated. It's really just an amazing, amazingly crafted film on every level.
Yeah.
And I don't know what would be number three. The Incredibles.
It's so
The Incredibles
great.
For sure.
I love Incredibles. I like the second one. I didn't mind the second one at all. I thought the second one was fun too.
I didn't mind the second one, but the first one I thought was just, that was another one that when it came out, I was like, oh man, this is so well written, directed, executed, like everything, it's a seamless, wonderfully, perfectly crafted piece of art.
Yes, without question. Now, where can people find you and in the work you're doing?
Let's see. So I am on Facebook, Pat Solomon on Facebook. I'm on YouTube, Patrick Solomon. And What Is Money is on Facebook. The new film, What Is Money, is a group on Facebook.
And when is that coming out?
I have no idea. So I'm a year into production. My deadline to be done with production was going to be this fall. We're going to try to release that early in the year. I don't know if that's going to happen now. Like I was just about to shoot all my B-roll when the COVID hit. So I still have a ton of B-roll to shoot. I was like, basically almost all my interviews are shot. Not all of them, but most of them are shot. So just still trying to figure it out. If anyone has any suggestions about shooting in the time of COVID, maybe if you could do a show on that, I'd tune in. How do we shoot? How are we going to go move forward? How are we going to get a crew together?
Got it. Well, Patrick, man, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. Your film touched me when it came out, and I'm so proud to have it on IFH TV. So thank you for sharing Joseph Campbell's work to the world, man.
Super stoked.
I want to thank Patrick for coming on the show and dropping those knowledge bombs. If you have not seen Finding Joe, it is a prerequisite for every storyteller, every filmmaker, every screenwriter to watch this documentary. It is, I just love this documentary. And I'm so honored to have Finding Joe available on Indie Film Hustle TV. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to watch this film, please head over to the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/404. And thank you all so much for the great support that you've given the new show that I just launched, Inside the Screenwriter's Mind, a screenwriting archive of the best screenwriting episodes from the IFH Podcast Network. If you want to check that new show out, please head over to www.screenwritersmind.com. And I hope all of you are doing well in this insane upside down world that we are living in right now. As a wonderful meme came up on my Facebook feed the other day, this too shall pass, but it might pass like a kidney stone. All right, guys, stay safe out there. And as always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast at IndieFilmHustle.com. That's IndieFilmHustle.com.